it's been a very difficult time for everyone. You know, the massive shift to online school, everything like that. People are busy, people are adjusting, lockdown, curfew, teams can't meet, they can't plan.
So we were speaking to the teams quite a lot at this point, and we were informing them. We were saying, okay, it's very, very, very likely that we're going to have to shift this online or postpone it.
From Amaya Media, I'm Chirag Desai, and this is Tales of the Trade, a show about our local entrepreneurs and the stories not just behind their companies, but also the communities they're bringing to life. So, remember when you were in high school? I'm not trying to make you feel old or anything, but at least when I was in high school, entrepreneurship wasn't even a word we used. But back in the summer of 2019, Dubai college student Ryan Malik shuttled himself to Duke University in the US for a summer entrepreneurship competition, and won.
What we created was an app called Pickup Sports. So it was something completely unrelated to what we're doing right now. But basically what it was is for like people who wanted to go play a basketball game and didn't have anyone to play with, they would be able to log on to the app and press where they're playing right now. And then they'll be matched with people and people could kind of meet up and play different pickup sports together. So this was more tailored for US because this is a big thing.
Of course, yeah, there in the US. And stuff is, yeah. Is a big thing there, yeah. When Ryan came back to Dubai, he started exploring ways in which he could continue this idea and in particular find the mentor and some funding to pursue it. And that's when he got together with one of his closest friends and fellow classmate Yusuf Zia.
So when Ryan came back after summer and he had won his competition and he sort of needed a partner over here, and him and I had been pretty close over summer, so he reached out to me and he said, why don't we enter one of these international competitions? So for a few weeks, Ryan and I began working on a competition called the Conrad Challenge, actually. And then towards the end of September, I think it was, we both sort of had the same idea at the same time where we said, why are we going international? I'm sure there's hundreds of other students here in the UAE who want to do this just as much as we do, but they don't have the opportunity. You know, we were lucky enough to have secured a spot in one of these challenges, but what about the masses of students in the UAE and even in the MENA region? So we said, why not give them that opportunity and why not bring a similar competition to life over here? And that was sort of the birth of the Global Entrepreneurship Challenge.
The kids got to work quickly, also setting up their company, Think, to become the umbrella under which the competition would be run.
The first step for us was to do a little bit of initial testing because we were making lots of assumptions. You know, we said, surely there's masses of students who want to do this, right. But we couldn't actually tell. We needed to get some ground testing done and to see what the actual response was to us launching something of this scale. So the very first step we did was we sort of ran an entrepreneurship club in our school called the Dubai Entrepreneurship Society. And we just sent an email about it to our school, which is about 800 students. And on the very first day, we had over 40 students turn up. Now, that's about 5% of our school. And to us, just 5% of one school, that's a small school in the UAE, in Dubai alone, wanting to come and attend and actually take part in something like this, pitch their startup ideas, gain funding, mentorship, and advice, and actually just like have that kind of opportunity that students in the MENA region just don't have. That for us was enough to say, okay, there's enough demand for this, let's do it. So we sort of sat down and then we began ideating the competition. You know, how would it be best? We looked into other competitions. Where do they fall short? Do they provide enough mentorship? Students who come out, do they continue with their ideas? But one massive thing for both Ryan and I was that we don't want this to just be a competition. We wanted it to be a process even after the competition. We want the people who come out of our competitions to actually become entrepreneurs. We want them to launch these startup ideas. And that's why we try to do everything we can to help them, to give them as much as we could.
The students were always at the forefront of what we were doing. So we're always trying to target and help the students and kind of cater to what the students need. And as students ourselves and as people who've gone through a little bit of the struggles of not having mentorship or guidance, that's something we then prioritized because we knew that students need access to people to give them advice, people who've gone through the process themselves. What types of prizes do the students need? Do they just need cash or do they need prizes that will help them continue their business, such as a trade license? So we started planning out these different things, and then that's how we started forming kind of the structure of our competition.
Were there some things you felt like maybe you had to do differently here to cater to what the needs of Gulf students were?
One of the main things we tried prioritizing in our competition, and when you look at other international competitions, they do this less than we do, is having these workshops for the students, having mentorship for the students. So each student was assigned a mentor who's kind of had vast experience in the world of entrepreneurship to reach out to speak about their ideas, to pitch to them and get feedback and advice. So we tried making it as personal as an experience as possible. And other international competitions, what sometimes happens is you write a written application, round one, round two, you kind of submit a video and then it's kind of over with. There's no real human interaction there. So we tried kind of upping that and providing mentorship and guidance. And that was our focal point. And that's also because students here had very limited experience on entrepreneurship. It's not taught in schools.
Talk me through how you kind of executed on that, right? So obviously it's one thing to identify, let's say, a need for mentors. But then when you look at a competition that might have 30, 40, 50 students or teams, you now have to actually go out and get those mentors and have them buy into what you're trying to do.
The first people we acquired was actually the judges, was the partners, and was the mentors, and then the students applied, because we knew that for students here in the UAE to buy into something so new like this, there had to be something substantial there for them to kind of win from it or kind of benefit from. So we basically said ourselves, we're going to be able to put in 3,000 dirhams to the prizes, and that was all the prizes we were offering, was 3,000 dirhams.
So it was kind of your own money as opposed to somebody else had donated for it, right?
Okay. Yeah, that was our own money, so we had to have something there obviously for the prizes, so we anticipated that, okay, we'll be able to make that back anyways. So we created that website and we had a little bit of prize money, and then we created a guidebook for how we wanted the competition to play out and why we wanted it to kind of be what it was. And then from that moment on, we started aggressively reaching out to people. So we emailed hundreds and hundreds of mentors and kind of founders here in the UAE and tried reaching out to everyone we could, and spent hours writing emails to people. And after all of that, we got a couple of responses, and then we set up meetings with them and we pitched our idea. And everyone, we were super fortunate that everyone really bought into our idea and what we were doing. And they're really sold on this idea that, okay, we can help kickstart this youth entrepreneurial ecosystem here in the UAE. So that's how we started getting some mentors on board. And it wasn't like we want this specific mentor, because obviously we couldn't really be picky with who we wanted.
Right, yeah.
We just tried getting anyone who was willing to help out with a competition.
How many people did you actually reach out to in the first list?
I think it would probably be over 500. Okay. And we sent like personal messages. So obviously we looked into their background, what they're doing, how they can help out. So it was a very time consuming process. And I think that's putting in all that effort and time is why we were able to be where we are right now.
That probably took all of October and about halfway through November. At this point, we had assembled a really, really good panel of judges, of serial entrepreneurs, people including Ankur Shah, the ex-CFO of Kareem now, Mona Ataya, the founder of Mom's World, and I mean, I could go on and list all our judges, but that would take a while. And we've begun getting sponsors such as Kareem and things on board, so we decided to open up applications. However, the deadline for applications was actually January 31st. So even between this point and Jan 31st, we had a lot of time to continue getting our mentors and everything before the students would be put in contact with them.
Was there a reason you went after like this aggressive kind of timeline? Because if you look at, even just coming through an ideation process, something that was brand new in September, you were trying to get all of this done by January. Like, was there a reason why you were looking at that kind of a timeline?
For a few reasons, actually. So the first thing we wanted to do is most students have exams towards the end of the year. And we didn't want the entrepreneurship competition to conflict with their exams in any way. Because, of course, you know, at the end of the day, school is every student's number one priority. We didn't want to bring it all the way into the next academic year. One more thing would be that our company that we're sort of setting up the competitions under was originally called Think Small, Think Smart. So a lot of the times what you see with like startups or people trying to start things is that they take so long ideating, thinking big, thinking how can we make this grow, planning out every tiny detail, that they just don't actually end up launching it. It doesn't actually go anywhere. And our motto for the longest time was think small, but think smart. So, you know, we didn't have any grand plans, so to speak, at the beginning when we launched the competition. We really just wanted to provide mentorship, guidance, and funding for like young high school students who had these startup ideas. And we wanted to do it smartly. And at the end of the day, like our competition did grow exponentially in ways we never could have imagined. But thankfully, we were well prepared for that.
Obviously, we were brand new to this. So we were learning everything as we were going along. We had never pitched an idea properly to kind of a company who's willing to give us money. So we never had that whole experience of kind of the pressure of pitching an idea, creating our own pitch deck, covering all the things we need to do, making sure our marketing material is right, communication. So we ran into all those minor issues, people rescheduling, canceling. But from September to January, I think it's fair to say that we had it pretty good. I mean, everything kind of went relatively smoothly.
You mentioned dealing with a few hiccups and understanding how, let's say, for example, communicating effectively and all that. Did you have help here? Did you look at these mentors, your parents, teachers, or somebody who to try to guide you when you ran into any of these?
Somewhat and somewhat not. So we obviously had access to our judges and our mentors, but we also tried coming across as super professional. So we tried coming across as like we have figured this stuff out, when naturally we had kind of gaps in our knowledge. Course, so we yeah. looked to kind of our parents, of course, to read over some emails that were important emails, and to our siblings to kind of check up on stuff. But aside from that, we didn't have full proper guidance until we were well kind of into the competition, and we had a wide range of people to kind of communicate with. So we kind of learned by doing, and we made many mistakes along the way. I'm sure we could have got another partner or two if we didn't make these mistakes, but I mean, through those mistakes we learned, and we learned what to do and what not to do. And I think that's kind of how we started to develop our competition and grow our skills so that we could kind of get better partners and prizes.
And is there a mistake that you look back now and you think like, man, I wish I'd just not done that or done that differently?
Yeah, for me, I think if we look back at when we started the competition, what we really wanted to do was partner with Expo 2020. And the reason behind this was we wanted students to be able to present their ideas at Expo, the winning teams. And this was something that we really, really, really wanted to do. It was, I wouldn't say the whole purpose of the competition, but initially when we started planning it out, like the best prize we wanted to offer was that opportunity. And the one thing, if I'm looking back on it now, would have been to not reach out to Expo so early on, because obviously we were naive. We reached out to the biggest one possible at that time in hope that something would happen. And we got rejected from that, and they said no.
Well, they actually said no. It's not that you couldn't get through to them. They actually didn't actually.
Yeah, they said no. They said that they're not willing to do it, and that they had their own like mini competitions going on. And obviously, that was a difficult one to take. Obviously, it was our first ever rejection in our first ever attempt for what the whole competition was meant to be for Expo. So that was probably one of the kind of hard moments in our kind of journey, I would say. And regret is kind of reaching out to them so soon. But also, I look, and Yusuf looks at it every the same way, where every mistake we've made is kind of a learning process, and it's helped us kind of reach out to these other partners and acquire these other partners for different things. So I wouldn't say it's something that, looking back on, I would change. But in the future going forward, we have to carefully plan when we reach out to people.
And I'm assuming as well that they didn't just reject you outright. They kind of obviously entertained it a bit and kind of look through the idea with you to try and see if there was a fit, and then decided not to. So obviously there's quite a bit of time that goes through, like just prepping those meetings and having those conversations.
Yeah, scheduling the meetings in between our own school and kind of dealing with both of those, then pitching to them, kind of continuing the conversation, discussing how we can benefit each other, and then kind of at the end, either it goes through or it doesn't. So each one is a very time-consuming process, yeah.
So pretty much with every mistake we ever made, like, as Ryan mentioned, I mainly handled the design and the marketing. And as I look back, I mean, I fell very short on our social media marketing. So many of the resources I put out were, quite frankly, like disappointing and things like that. But I look at that and I say, you know, okay, that was the very first time I ever did anything. But, you know, I've read more books, I've read more articles, I've spoken to people who work in the design field, who work in marketing, and they've told me, and, you know, I've been able to learn from that, so that we're at the point now where, you know, I don't think I'm anywhere near knowing enough, but I certainly know a lot more than I did last year. And for me, that's the biggest achievement. And that's why, like, I've been so passionate about this competition from beginning to now.
Who was the first sponsor that came on board?
Yeah, our first sponsor was a company in Abu Dhabi called Crypto Labs. They're like an incubator, accelerator.
Yeah, I've been there, yeah.
So it kind of fits under the right theme. So we reached out to them. We went down to Abu Dhabi and pitched our idea. And they obviously got behind it just by the nature of what they're doing. And they were the first ones to kind of give us that opportunity and the time of day and actually accept the partnership and provide. And all our kind of partnership entailed with them was really focused on the students, so boot camps, workshops.
And I can imagine that was a good feeling, especially after all, but all the time that you'd spend kind of putting into making sure that you had good partners on board.
But obviously it was a feeling like, okay, what we're doing can actually work. Someone's believed in what we're doing. They're willing to kind of put their brand forward and willing to put money and time into what we are doing because they believe it has potential. So it's kind of reinforcing. You could say that idea and the belief that what we were doing would work could have been like decreasing because of all the rejections, all the time spent. So to finally see a little bit of outcome from all our work was a great feeling. And from there, then we started taking off. And it was also having a company that you can go to pitch to other companies and say, this company is supporting
has
our idea.
Has agreed to us, yeah.
Yeah, it gave us a kind of a much better opportunity to get other partners. And that was really instrumental in the development of our competition.
You mentioned that initially you guys started out with this prize money of about 3,000 dirhams. That is what you wanted to put in. Did you go about resetting the prize money? Did you go about setting any kind of limits to say, okay, like now let's do this or let's target that? Or was it kind of like, let's be organic about it and see what we can land by the time everybody applies?
Yeah, so with the prize money, so each company has a different kind of sponsorship style package. So it's all curated and kind of tailor-made for the company. So some companies, whilst they're not willing to put out direct cash towards prizes, they would contribute in other ways, such as providing internships or providing mentorship or workshops. So we reached out to companies and like, obviously it went very organically and kind of it grew that way. But in terms of prizes, everything and every single sponsorship was for our prizes. So in some way we classify like mentorship and workshops, as well under kind of the branches of prizes. The prize pool gradually grew from 3,000 dirhams to where it is now at 120 or 130,000 dirhams. And that grew through kind of reaching out to these partners and pitching to them. But there wasn't a specific criteria for each partner. It was more so, can you reach this and what can you provide? And so there's about like 15,000 dirhams in cash. There's courtesy of our partner ITP Media, we have 36,500 dirhams in just pure marketing through Arabian Business, through online advertisements. We had an additional 5,000 dirhams in cash for like the winning healthcare team, a free trade license worth about 25,000 dirhams from our partners Virtue Zone. You had entrepreneurship boot camps at Crypto Labs for a whole month worth about 2,000 dirhams per person. You had 15,000 dirhams in like vouchers for different softwares and kind of different places as well.
Now, these partnerships also help build the base of the competition. So, for example, the criteria to evaluate entries and who would qualify for round two was developed in partnership with Crypto Labs. And from the original 300 applicants and 155 teams, the competition was now down to 67 teams, gearing up to present a live pitch to the judges. And then schools had to close down in March. More on that after this short break. Stay with us. You're listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya Media.
Hi, I'm Courtney Brandt, and I'm happy to share that a new season of CSR of One, a podcast and social initiative, is live in your favorite podcast player. On each episode, we talk to individuals who are putting their weight behind philanthropic initiatives outside of their chosen careers. From responding to the demands of the community during COVID-19 to realizing a sustainable dream, our guests are truly inspiring. You can find the third season of CSR of One in your favorite podcast players, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and even streaming apps like Spotify and Anghami. And we'd love it if you gave us a review on Apple Podcasts or IMDb for the episode or episodes you enjoyed the most. We can't wait to share these inspirational conversations with you and hear your feedback.
Welcome back, I'm Chirag Desai, and you're listening to Tales of the Trade with Ryan Malek and Yusuf Zia, co-founders of Think and the Global Entrepreneurship Challenge. Now, as the competition was getting ready for round two in March 2020, Dubai was also dealing with a rise of coronavirus cases and instituted a curfew, leading to a shutdown of schools and events.
Which meant that round two, which we were planning to hold in our school's auditorium, also had to be cancelled. So we sort of reached out to the teams and we sent them a questionnaire, and what they said was that they would just do a pre-recorded pitch. This was limited to 10 to 15 minutes, and this was then sent off to our judges. That round two application filtration happened between March 14th and the end of March. And I mean, Ryan and I at this point were still extremely hopeful that the date which we had set for round three, April 18th, we would be able to sort of do our live event of 1,000 people.
Yeah, because we had communicated around that time, and I remember, I think one of you had replied back to the exactly the same way to say, look, I mean, we're getting through with round two, but hopefully, fingers crossed, before we hit May or June, we'll be okay, right? And then I remember having that conversation with you guys, yeah.
Yeah, so we were still extremely hopeful at that point, and we really thought that, you know, April 18th, it's a full month away from March 8th, you know, right. Hopefully that we can hold a 1,000-person event. But our judges, a few of them actually reached out to us, and they said, guys, like, it's best to just be prepared in case this can't go through because things aren't looking good right now. So we started to sort of plan out and think, okay, if we're unable to do it live, what would be the best way of doing it instead? And what we did is, as we approached April 11th, you know, a week before the competition, we realized, okay, this isn't going to happen. So we reached out to all our partners. We reached out to all our finalists now, the top 10 teams only. And we said, like, look, guys, like, we really wanted to make this happen, but we can't. So we have a few options. And whichever one suits, like, everything we did, as Ryan said, we did for our participants, you know. Like, we're not going to say, let's do it in the middle of your exam period. You know, maybe in June things are better. So we said we can either hold it at the beginning of next year, hopefully live, granted everything goes well, so that would have been around this time. Okay. Or we can hold it online at some point during, you know, April to August. or we can hold it online during the summer. And I think every single team replied back to say online during the summer is what we're most hopeful for. You know, some of our teams were 18 years old. They were planning to go to university in September. They were like, right, we won't be able to do anything live post next year. So we began planning it out, and we said, okay, you know, like, technically they're all prepared. They could do it live next week on April 18th. But, you know, it's been a very difficult time for everyone. You know, the massive shift to online school, everything like that. People are busy. People are adjusting. Lockdown, curfew. Teams can't meet. They can't plan. So what we decided to do actually is we said, let's give them a few months, let things settle down, and let's give them a lot of time to discuss with their mentors. So this is sort of where, you know, the mentorship program was happening in the background, but it sort of went full blown. So I began aggressively reaching out to our mentors again, making sure that at least like 1 to 2 calls were scheduled with mentors and teams every week. They were really getting that mentorship. At this point, like, we were sending almost daily emails, just sort of keeping them up to date and things.
Yeah, so we were speaking to the teams quite a lot at this point, as Yusuf just mentioned, and we were informing them. We were saying, okay, it's very, very, very likely that we're going to have to shift this online or postpone it. So just be prepared that that's probably going to be the case. However, in the event that this event does take place on April 18th, you guys still all need to be fully prepared. So each right. team was still fully preparing. They were still having their mentorship calls. They were still working through their pitch decks and kind of trying to prepare as best as possible. But everyone somewhat kind of, as you looked at the cases and you saw them rising, everyone kind of knew that, okay, this is not going to go ahead. We tried holding on to that little bit of hope. But yeah, that's basically, everyone was working their background, but we were all mentally prepared for it to be postponed.
I mean, at this point, we realized like mentors are also a little bit more free now. Like, let's really give them as much time and as much like face-to-face time with the mentors as we can. So of course, like, the mentors had been having calls and things with the teams pre like the postponement, but I began making sure and like getting on, not that I wasn't on top of it beforehand, but right. just sort of like doing weekly check-ins with the teams, you know, making sure they had their calls, you know, what kind of progress they made. And around this time, Ryan and I also started doing a few check-ins with the teams to see if they needed anything, if they wanted to switch out mentors to, you know, get a different perspective, you know, someone, a mentor perhaps working in like the fintech field, they might want a mentor working in the education side, just to sort of, you know, change things sure. up a little bit.
And did you come across any teams that felt like they needed they were going to change something drastically because of this?
To be honest, no. So a lot of the teams, their ideas actually fitted very well to COVID. So something we saw in the finale presentations that were just a few weeks ago is yeah. COVID helped their idea, or it sort of opened up the market a little bit more, because a lot of teams were doing things online. To give an idea, our second place winner, Virtutor, is an online learning platform. And for them, right. you know, COVID sort of only propagated their idea more and made their pitch more realistic.
So I found out about the Global Entrepreneurship Challenge through one of my friends who was friends with the leaders of the challenge.
Nada Hussein is one of the co-founders of second place winner Virtutor, a service that's aimed to use machine learning to grade, assess, and provide feedback to enrich online learning. And this was something that was born out of her and her classmates' own frustrations with online classes.
And then I teamed up with one of my classmates who was really interested in artificial intelligence and machine learning so that we could actually develop the idea, think about the technicalities of how it would work. And then after the competition, I decided to continue pursuing Virtutor and hopefully actually seeing it flourish into the vision that we had for it, which was for it to be used by several students here in the UAE. And then it'll expand to other GCC countries, and then hopefully it can be used by other students around the world as well.
Fast forward now to actually coming finally down to round 3. Tell me as well what you guys learned from just watching, you know, these 10 finalists kind of do their pitches and the levels they were at, considering all the mentorship that had gone in, all the hard work that had gone in, not just from them, but also from you in terms of putting this together.
Yeah, Yusuf and I think, look back on the day of the finale, and it was an extremely rewarding experience, just being able to sit through that and watch, kind of, as you said, the fruits of our labor, watch everyone kind of come together for this big event. So we basically took a step back and kind of looked at what we had achieved this whole year through the competition, and kind of said, okay, now we need to do this again this year, bigger and better. So we're still figuring a few logistical things out, including dates and exactly when it would start, when it would end, if we can even do it in person in a year's time, let's say, or if we can't. Are we going to prepare for it to be fully online? How are we going to structure it? If we are moving online, do we open it up to more than just high school students here in the UAE? Do we open it up to high school students all around the world potentially?
During the application process, did someone reach out to you, let's say, from outside the UAE?
So we had a few people who tried to enter from, I think, Sweden, Finland, India.
So not even the Gulf, okay.
Yeah.
As you mentioned initially, you had set the criteria as being in the UAE because obviously it was meant to be an in-person event. Is that something you, like as you mentioned just now, you're looking to change, but are you looking to change it to go as far as Sweden and India?
Yeah, this is something we're still currently kind of going back and forth on, because one thing we want to do is make sure we don't spread ourselves too thin. So we want to make sure that we're not having more applicants coming in that we can actually provide good mentorship for and kind of good prizes and everything. So we want to make sure that kind of we have that nice ratio of kind of applicants to mentors and to judges. So this is something we're still exploring. We do intend one day to have this kind of go and span more than just the GCC or the MENA region. But as of now, we're still kind of, as I said, going back and forth on it.
Well, our conversation with Ryan and Yusuf focused mainly on the global entrepreneurship challenge. As I'd mentioned, the students have also established a company, Think, spelled with a Y, under which the competition and future initiatives will continue to be ideated.
We kind of feel like we're building a brand under our company, Think. So we feel like we're trying to build a brand to help the youth in many different ways. So whether it be initially started off through the Global Entrepreneurship Challenge, which is providing an entrepreneurship competition for high school students. And that we still plan to continue, but we don't want to just solely limit ourselves to competitions. So right now what we're doing actually is we're developing an entrepreneurship curriculum with the support of faculty from NYUAD for high school students. So it's and we're currently developing it right now and working on it. An entrepreneurship curriculum tailored for high school students, and we can provide these two schools and say, okay, here is, if you want guidelines, or if you're looking to try implement entrepreneurship into your school, or you're trying to kind of build that entrepreneurial community, these are some guidelines you can use. These are how you would structure a curriculum around it. So that's something we're doing as part of our brand. Another thing we're doing, and it's still in the works right now, so we're not going to mention too much about it, is something called Project Z, where we're helping students kind of get work experience, and kind of introduce themselves to kind of the formal world of work. And we're currently working on that solution, and we hope that will be out in a couple of months.
I mean, we spoke a little bit about how COVID kind of impacted the competition specifically. So I kind of want to get your perspective as students, right? Like, how are you guys looking at this in terms of how it's affecting not just, of course, you guys are doing a lot more, but how it's affecting your education?
Yeah, I would say that the move to online has had both positive and negative effects being a student. So we're fortunate enough to get to a school that as soon as we went online in April or March of earlier this year, we immediately kind of had online classes, and it was basically our kind of what we were learning stayed the same. Obviously, there's a limit to what you can cover in an online environment, and there's kind of those technical issues, but the actual content we were covering, we were fortunate enough to not be in that position where we were kind of missing out on school time. But then you do look at it from the other side of things, like running activities, running clubs, just interacting with students, and that whole environment has changed.
It's a big part of the experience, right, of growing up and kind of doing, being in school actually, or even at university.
Yeah, just that whole interaction process. And I mean, our school is trying their best to kind of create that whole interactivity in lessons and kind of break you up into different partner groups. But still, blended learning is happening. You have students at home still. So kind of the class dynamic has changed as well. What you can cover has changed. So yeah, it's a completely different experience. The exams, so luckily we aren't in a year where we were either taking our A-levels or our GCSEs under the British curriculum, but both those exams, kind of not being able to sit your exam but still be getting a grade for it, is a kind of a whole unique process in itself that kind of went horribly wrong for certain students. So there's lots of pressures also of online learning and uncertainties that were brought up.
I think for me it's more of a glass half empty, half full kind of thing, where it's all about how you choose to look at and how you choose to frame it. So I think that COVID, obviously, like our learning was, not to say compromised, but a lot of experiences that we might have had in school, and, you know, being able to interact with classmates, see friends and things like that, those were obviously sort of taken away or postponed until this year for a lot of us. But at the same time, like the actual onset of COVID gave students a lot more time than we would have had if we were still going to school. And for those people who chose to utilize the time, I feel like they actually were able to make something good out of all the bad that was happening. And like, for example, I have friends who chose to learn a new instrument, chose to take up cooking, baking, learn a new skill. When you choose to use your time productively, you're actually able to enjoy that time a lot more. You don't feel drained by your schoolwork. Not that I feel drained by my schoolwork, but in the sense of more like, it's all about
Having to do the experience online is draining, though. I mean, I can understand that. Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
But it's all about how you choose to sort of frame it. You know, you could either look at it as I'm missing out on so much, or you could look at it as I have so much more time. How am I going to use it?
Yeah, for sure. It's just a whole learning experience as well. Just working for something for so long and then having something just completely change and disrupt what you're doing and having to adapt and adjust to it. That was a whole experience in itself, and kind of how we went about that and all the skills we learned from that were super helpful, alongside also making sure now we know the best webinar platforms to use. We know how to get students and mentors to interact better online, and all those skills we've developed that helps us put on a better competition next year.
And are you guys better friends or worse friends because of all this?
Mixture of two. It depends on the day.
I'll leave that one to Ryan.
It depends on the day. Like some days, like when everything's going great and it's all fine, it's always fun being able to kind of live through these experiences with someone is always helpful, because when something goes wrong and kind of a sponsor rejects you that you really wanted, you have someone there as well to kind of go through it with you, so you don't feel like you're alone in the process, because it can be tiring and hard with school as well, having all that pressure on and kind of having to balance those two. So in those times as well, it's helpful. But obviously on the other side of things, sometimes, yet again, like I don't want to work, or Yusuf doesn't want to work, and kind of having someone holding the other person accountable. And that's when you can say, I guess, that kind of the friendship also, I wouldn't say it's been worsened, but obviously we've tested out each other quite a lot when we have different views. We test each other out quite a lot when we have different views. Sometimes Yusuf doesn't want to do something and I do. Sometimes we disagree on decisions, but we managed to overcome most of those pretty well. So that's my opinion of it, at least.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree with that. Of course, like, as we mentioned, there were so many days where, you know, we were just working so hard on it that I think we would meet together, like, during winter break at 7 a.m. and we'd be there till almost 5 p.m. just working together. And that was, you know, the whole of our winter break. And at the end of that, to come back to school and be sitting next to each other in the same class, you know, you sort of, there's almost like you see too much of a person, and there's certain times when you need a break. But, and then on weekends, going to meetings together, straight from school, going to meetings together. But overall, I think probably stronger.
But did you guys take a break? Or you took it now?
From each other? Yes. I mean, after the competition, we took off a week or a week and a half. And obviously, we see each other in school every day. So we still have that whole experience. But in terms of going and pitching to companies or hopping on video calls and kind of speaking to different partners or judges, that's kind of taking place less right now because we're more planning. But we are expecting that to kind of take place in a couple of months. But yeah, we have taken a bit of a break in terms of speaking to each other and kind of not speaking to each other, but like working on the competition, I guess you could say, for a few weeks. Yeah.
You can find out more about Ryan and Yusuf's work by visiting think.me or globalentrepreneurshipchallenge.com, and we really look forward to seeing what they have in store next year. This episode of Tales of the Trade was produced by me, Chirag Desai, and made possible with the support of Pooja Sagar, Abhishek Venkatasubramanian, and Zainab Ujjaini. If you're enjoying this season, we would love it if you can share the show with your friend or leave us a review in Apple Podcasts, IMDb, or Podchaser. You can also connect with us on Instagram at talesofthe.trade. Tales of the Trade is part of the Ameya Media Podcast Network. You can find out more at ameya.media, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.